Welcome to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast. Every 2 weeks, we explore news and issues affecting hunters, anglers, and conservation across the northeastern United States. If you enjoy the content here, be sure to subscribe to our print or digital versions by calling 800-535-5191 or visit our website at outdoornews.com. Now, here's your host and a man who claims he's immune to buck fever, New York Outdoor News editor Dan Ladd.
This episode of the Great Northeast Podcast is brought to you by the Family Forest Carbon Program, a collaborative initiative created by two nonprofit organizations, the American Forest Foundation and the Nature Conservancy, assisting landowners in improving the health of their land with long-term sustainable forest management practices while providing guaranteed annual income. Learn more at familyforestcarbon.org. Welcome to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. Happy to be along and happy to have you along as we are officially here in the middle of August. And that means hunting seasons are not too far away. Here in New York and many other northeastern states, September 1st is usually when some of the small game seasons begin. Here in New York, it's squirrel and also Canada goose, that early Canada goose season, which is quite popular. So everyone looking forward to hunting, well, it's right around the corner. We hope you're out there flinging some arrows or spending some time at the gun range and getting your body in shape for the season. Whatever it takes, it won't be long. But before we talk too much about hunting, we're going to talk some fishing. The Bassmasters Elite Series was just in Plattsburgh, New York over the weekend of August 13th to 16th. They're going to be on the St. Lawrence River coming up August 27th to 30th. There's also a Pro-Am, an NFL Pro-Am with Randy Moss. Kind of an interesting event going to take place on the 31st in Clayton. I kind of wish I could see that myself, but I'm not going to have the opportunity. I was in Plattsburgh for the Elite Series event. I went up there and spent a day on Friday, and that was won by Maryland angler Brian Schmidt. 80 pounds, 7 ounces of bass, and that's his second win there, so congratulations to him. He seems to have figured out the big lake between New York and Vermont. Being a SUNY Plattsburgh graduate, it's always an opportunity for me to take a ride down memory lane when I go to Plattsburgh. But one of the things I really like to do when I get up to these tournaments, first of all, as a newspaper editor, I need to get caught up on some of my photos, especially many of the newer anglers that are out there. So when the trail comes around to Plattsburgh, I usually try to scoot up there. It's fairly close to home. But the main thing I really like to do is talk with a guy named Gene Gilliland. He is the conservation director for bass, and he is a wealth of knowledge on many things bass. I mean, he talks with state agencies all across the country, anywhere that this organization is holding tournaments, again, all around the nation. And that includes New York. And as you know, in New York, we now have a bass tournament permit system. So I was weighed in with Gene on that, got his thoughts on, you know, what that might mean for not just the anglers, but the data that the agency DEC is collecting. And we also talked about forward-facing sonar. And then finally in this podcast, I spent some time on a media boat with a young angler from Plattsburgh who knows the lake real well and gave me a front row seat demonstration to forward-facing sonar. That was enlightening. We've got all that and more after this.
Are you an avid angler searching for the latest fishing news and tips? It's time to check out OutdoorNews.com. Get ready to reel in the freshest updates and expert advice from top anglers. Plus, you'll have access to the most up-to-date fishing reports, lake maps, lake reports, and more. Don't let the big one get away. Join OutdoorNews.com and reel in a world of fishing knowledge and expertise. Join today, OutdoorNews.com. Your passion, your news, your fishing journey.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. And as promised, we're going to take you up to Plattsburgh, New York for the Bassmaster Elite Series event on Lake Champlain. And a really good, solid conversation I had with Bass Conservation Director Gene Gilliland. Here we go. You're here in Plattsburgh, headed for St. Lawrence. What are you hearing about the fish? What's your observations thus far?
Well, we've only had, you know, one day under our belt here at Champlain. The catch was great. Of course, this year without forward-facing sonar, there's a lot more largemouth in the mix. I don't know the exact percentage, but it's significantly higher percentage of largemouth than we've had the last couple of trips up here. We had a Bass Nation tournament here just 2 weeks ago, and it was forward-facing sonar, and it was almost 100% smallmouth. So that kind of changes the dynamic of the tournament, obviously, but from the fish standpoint, the fish look great. In our pre-tournament meeting, I was praising the anglers for doing such a good job of taking care of their fish. On the live release boat, they haven't had to do much fizzing. The fish are not being caught real deep, and they're just taking care of them. Now, some of that is we've had calm weather, so there's no long, rough boat rides. You know, that certainly plays a role, especially, you know, with it being calmer, we've got a lot more anglers going a lot further. They're making the run to tie.
Right.
And not all of them. Certainly the bulk of them are kind of staying up in the northern part of the lake. But you know, when we get those years, when we get the really big, strong south winds, it almost shuts that south end of the lake off just because people can't get there. So, but from my standpoint and fish care and stuff, these kind of conditions are just great.
It was beautiful out there. I just came off the media boat, and Steve Kennedy's a guy I've talked with here over the years, and he likes to run down to that end of the lake. In mm-hmm. fact, he finished second here 1 year fishing in South Bay, which yeah. is actually butts up to my hometown, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But I saw him on the map there and saw that he was down at that end. I'm curious to see what he's bringing back from down that end of the lake. And of course, Timmy Horton won the tournament down there yep. by the Crown Point Bridge 1 year.
Yep.
I was here for that. Here in New York, you're probably familiar with the fact that we now have a permit system
yes,
for
sir.
Bass tournaments. Were you consulted during any of that?
Actually, I was.
I thought you would be.
The chief of fisheries called me one day. At least two years ago. I can't remember exactly when. Mm-hmm. And said they were interested in looking into some sort of a system. And so what I did was I referred them to the state of Michigan. Michigan DNR had put together a system several years ago that is online. It's simply registration. Tournaments just sign up. It's not really a permit, but it lets the state know who's having tournaments and where. And other tournament organizations can go online and look and see, okay, we want to have a tournament on this lake on that date. Oops, there's already somebody there. Let's pick another spot. And so it has helped relieve congestion and created some of the access problems that were popping up. So Michigan has said, we'll make that system available to anybody. Here's the software for free. All you have to do is change the name of the state. New York took it and they modified it, though, to turn it into a permit system where mm-hmm. they have somebody review the application and decide to approve or deny the permit. And I think they look at those access issues so you don't have too many tournaments on the same lake at the same time. And they make some judgment calls about the size of the tournaments and how many boats and that sort of thing. I think from what I've heard, just talking to some of the folks here, the system is working pretty well. Most of the tournament organizations are kind of buying into the idea of, and I think when you don't have anything and you wind up with conflicts because there's people show up at the same ramp at the same time, a system like that helps prevent those conflicts is generally welcomed by most of the other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's working pretty well. I think the one thing that I know they saw in Michigan and I know they're going to see here in New York, when they get a full year's worth of this information, they will be absolutely astonished at how many bass tournaments there are in this state.
Mm-hmm.
I know in Michigan, the first year they did it, they had 1,800 tournaments registered. Second year, it was like 2,200. The agency really had no idea how many tournaments were going on. And I think that's kind of similar to what's happened in New York. They're realizing that bass fishing is a big deal. And there's a lot of people participating. You've got a lot of tournaments going on. It's very popular. And from our perspective at Bass and from the bass fishing community, we think that's a good thing because that tells us that the agency is starting to pay attention to black bass management. Because for decades, most of the northern states across the country, the bass fisheries have been on autopilot. They really aren't managed. They may have a length limit or a bag limit, but they, for the most part, especially with black bass, with the catch and release ethic is so high, 95% of the bass are released anyway. So there's not a lot of active management going on. When you start trying to figure out, okay, how can we make fishing better? One of the first things you've got to know is how many people are out there doing it? How many anglers are fishing for bass? How many tournaments are there? What kind of fishing pressure are we getting? What are they catching? You got to have start collecting that data that in a lot of cases has been lacking. And a good tournament registration permitting system is a really great place to start. So I think it's a great thing that they've got it going. And I think it'll pay dividends in the future.
Is the data something you guys will look at in the future?
Yeah, we do. And conversely, we share our data with the state. At the end of each of our tournaments, the elite tournaments, we have the Bass Track system, mm-hmm. you know, that feeds our leaderboard that you can see on Bassmaster.com. But that information is all stored in big spreadsheets. And so we can send that information to the state biologist who manages these lakes, and it will tell them, you know, how many fish have been caught, total weights of those fish. It'll tell them actually when, because every time a fish is entered into the Bass Track system, it's entered with a time and a GPS location, so they can know where those fish are coming from. And see if there are certain areas that tend to be more productive for whatever reason. Some of the states that we've worked with will use that data then to look at the possibilities of things like habitat enhancements to see if, okay, we need to do something about maybe aquatic vegetation over here or artificial structures over here or something like that, some sort of habitat work. So it's something that they can use. They can play around with that data and massage it and look at it and see if it's something that they can build into their management programs. And it's it's a two-way street. I think overall the whole concept of a lot of the anglers and the tournament groups at first are real reluctant to get into any kind of registration. They don't want big government telling them where they can and can't fish.
And they were afraid, some of them, that they would be denied.
Right.
You know,
But when you look at the reasons they're denied, it's generally because there's too many boats, too many other tournaments going on. There's, you know, that one of the things, of course, the bass fishermen kind of have tunnel vision. There's a lot of other users of these lakes, a lot of other people, other stakeholders, whether it's skiers or just people that like to boat, other fishermen that aren't tournament anglers. So the agency has to work with all of those people. They don't work just for the bass fishermen. So that's one of the things they've got to take into consideration when they're looking at these permits.
DEC released a report, I'm going to say at the end of June. We ran it in our paper. Mm-hmm. I can't remember how many tournaments there were, but the most were on this very lake right here, and I think that number was 72.
Yep.
This lake had the most, and that included kayak tournaments as well, because
right.
The kayak fishing is taking off in this state pretty good. We have a lot
sure.
of smaller lakes, but they're fishing the bigger lakes too. Mm-hmm. And Steve Hurst, who is the mm-hmm. know, Bureau of Fisheries chief,
right.
he told me, he said, this is data we've never had before.
Right.
You know, we've never had this before, and that's just like you pointed out is very, you know, a wealth of knowledge to have.
Sure.
So they're in their second year now, but the report, if you get a chance to take a look at it, I believe it's online. It's you definitely can find it through the press releases, but they talked about, you know, what lake caught the biggest fish, what lake had the most fish, and mm-hmm. things like that. Largemouth, smallmouth, a lot of statistics, which
right.
you're very familiar with.
Right.
So I guess the question that I want to ask you about the data is, would you look at the data and say, well, here's a lake we've never been to before, and I'm going to mention Lake George just because of my home water, and I think it's a sleeper of a fishery, and you say, maybe we should explore having an open there, or talk with the community to see if they can facilitate a tournament of
sure.
any size. I don't know if
sure.
that's the data you would start with for that purpose. You know,
it's part of the equation. You know, for BASS or MLF or any of the larger organizations, for them to bring a tournament to a specific location, it's obviously you want to have a good fishery. But you also have to have the infrastructure. You need to have the boat ramps. You need to have the hotels and restaurants and the things that the crowd and the anglers are going to depend on when you get there. There are a lot of lakes around the country that are fabulous fisheries that don't have some of those other pieces
sure.
of the puzzle.
Right.
The other component that a lot of people don't really understand is that Bass and MLF and other groups like that, we generally don't go somewhere just because the fishing's good. It's because we have been invited by a community, and those communities generally pay a host fee. I kind of explain it like they pay us to bring the circus to town. And that is something that a lot of people miss out on. Why don't they come to my lake, my lake, my lake? Well, it's because your Chamber of Commerce or your Tourism Bureau hasn't really looked into it to see whether or not they think it's worth the investment. Now, in most cases, I know they've done it. They did a study here several years ago. The university here in Plattsburgh,
my alma mater,
did an economic impact study. And that year, there was a Bass Open and an MLF. I think back then they were called the Everstarts. And the amount of money that the city had to pay to bring those tournaments in was something on the order, I don't remember the exact number, and I'm sure somebody will dig this up and tell me I'm wrong, but let's say it's $100,000. The money that came back to the community from people staying in hotels, buying gas, paying taxes on things, was like $600,000. So at some point, the community says, this is a pretty good investment. And that's why certain locations, like Plattsburgh, tend to bring tournaments back year after year after year, because they understand it's an economic engine to this community. And other places around the country that haven't done that, a lot of times are very reluctant to take that leap and try to, you know, come up with the host fees because they haven't done it before. But generally, once they do it, they'll figure out how to find the money to bring the organizations back, because it is a great investment. And certainly with an elite tournament like this, the host fee is just a little part of it. What this community gets out of all these people that are staying in the hotels and that sort of thing, the exposure that this lake and this area gets on Bassmaster.com and now on Fox Television, they couldn't afford that if they had to buy
sure.
it. And so that's a huge part of what these tournaments can bring, is not just the bodies, as the tourism people call it, the heads in beds. It's the exposure from the media side of it that tells people how great the fishing is here. And that then in turn just multiplies people wanting to come and go fishing here.
Well, this is only Friday. You got two more days after this, and you've already got quite a spectator crowd here today for a Friday, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, from what I've seen at past tournaments, there's people out there waiting right now for the anglers to come in. Let's skip ahead to St. Lawrence. I mean, how you feeling about that?
St. Lawrence is always a... it's from my perspective on the fish care side, is more challenging, because it's going to be pretty much all smallmouth. It will be a tournament where they allow forward-facing sonar. There will be a lot more fish caught deep water especially those that are fishing way out into Lake Ontario. And so we have a lot more to do on the live release boat, in our tanks backstage. It's smallmouth in general are more sensitive to temperature and oxygen levels, and so we really have to be on top of our game in terms of our fish care protocols to make sure that we release those fish as healthy as they can possibly be. And the guys always catch them. You know, it's a fish factory. And so it's very, very rare that we don't have every single angler coming in with a 5-fish limit every day. And so we'll have lots of fish. They're big fish, and they're pretty much, most of them, all of them be smallmouth. So it's gonna be, you know, it's a challenge, but they will catch them. And, you know, we look at our statistics every year. The average size of the fish creeps up a little bit, you know, a tenth of a pound or so here and there. And I expect that trend probably will continue. At some point, it'll probably level out, but, you know, some of the biologists, especially, there's a Dr. Bruce Tufts, who's at Queen's University right across the river there in Ontario, has been tracking this for years. And, you know, we know that a lot of these smallmouth, the big ones are really old. 15, 16, 18, maybe even 20 years old in some cases. But what we've got now is an entire generation of smallmouth that have grown up from the time they were big enough to start eating fish at the little fingerling stage. They've been eating gobies their entire life. And so the growth rates tend to be bigger, better, faster than previous generations of smallmouth. And so they're getting bigger faster. You know, they're getting up to that 4 and 5 pound size. It's not taking 15, 18 years. It's taken 12, 13, 14 years. You know, it's still a long time. Those are old fish. And certainly that's something we've got to be very conscious of, is they don't get replaced overnight.
Right.
You know, and we want to make sure we take care of them, and we really stress that with our anglers. We teach a lot of fizzing training. We do a lot of fizzing training. We've got Barb Elliott down here on the release boat. She's with the New York Bass Nation. People call her the fizzing queen because she has taught more people how to take care of their fish and how to fizz them properly than anybody alive. She comes to all of our New York tournaments.
I know who she is. I've never met her, but she's
we'll get you down.
I think I just talked to her a minute ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is a volunteer. She is incredibly passionate about keeping these smallmouth alive and healthy and protecting the resource. And so we utilize her talents. And we have gone through training programs with all of our anglers to teach them how to take care of their fish, especially under these summertime conditions, you know, which might be a little more adverse, whether it's hotter weather or long rough rides on, you know, when the lakes get rough. Those kind of things that they have to deal with, we want to make sure that they know the best things, the best ways to keep their fish healthy.
You know, there's a big concern about the goby making its way into Lake Champlain. I don't know if you're aware of that or not.
Oh, yeah.
What they're doing with the locks.
Going
and all
through
that.
The locks,
sure.
Right.
Yeah, that's a big topic right now. And
from the biological standpoint, obviously any invasive species is going to have consequences when it gets into a system, because there's almost no way to get rid of them after they get in. And you don't know what those consequences are going to be, good or bad. In most of the Great Lakes, from a bass fishing standpoint, gobies and to some extent zebra mussels have not been the doomsday that everybody predicted 20, 30 years ago when they first started to show up. Water's clear, more vegetation growing. The gobies eat the zebra mussels, although they don't control the zebra mussel, that's what they feed on.
That was my conversation with Bass Conservation Director Gene Gilliland. We got cut short there on the Gobi discussion as the tournament was really starting to kick in, the weigh-in, and I had to let Gene go. We'll pick up that conversation another day. When we come back, I've got another conversation with a young angler who fishes Lake Champlain regularly, and he gave us a great demonstration of forward-facing sonar. We'll talk more about that when we come back right after these messages.
There's a great program available for youth who love to hunt and fish. It's called the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team, and any youth 18 or under can join for free at jrproteam.com. JPT program showcases useful videos and tips to help encourage the next generation to become stronger anglers and hunters. It's a platform to celebrate and inspire those outdoor loving youth. Check out the photos of Outdoor News Junior Pro Team members on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube, and visit our jrproteam.com for more information.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Vermont, Massachusetts, or New York, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Okay, I'm Dan Ladd with the Great Northeast Podcast, New York Outdoor News. We're on Lake Champlain right now with Ryan LeBounty, a Plattsburgh native. And Ryan has been controlling the media boat here today, and he's had me out on the water, and he just gave me a really cool demo of forward-facing sonar. What's the name you use for it, Ryan?
LiveScope, LiveScan.
Okay. Tell us about yourself.
I grew up right here in Plattsburgh, fishing, hunting all over the area. Ever since I was a little kid, still doing it to this day.
And you're affiliated with a local bass club, right?
Correct, yes.
And tell us about that.
I fish with the North Country Bass Anglers. It's not like super expensive, not super big. It's just a bunch of local guys out every other weekend, every other Sunday for 8 hours and fish against each other.
How long you been doing that?
I'd say 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah, and you done well? Won some tournaments?
I've won two, yes. Okay. Took third a couple times. It's challenging because you're against a lot of local guys that know the same spots you do and stuff.
So the tournament here, we're obviously here for the Bassmasters Elite Series event. How'd you get connected with that? Through the Bass Club?
Yeah, we started when I was really young. We had our like a little kids like fishing club, and we helped out with elites when they were here back in 2016, 2017, and we helped out with that, and then we got to know people like Lisa and Chris, the guys that run it now, and ever since then, every year we help, and in the last few years, we started, guys would come over from the St. Lawrence River and help us. In return, we would go and help them.
So, I've probably got pictures of you. I've taken pictures of some of the kids here through the years.
I would not be shocked.
I'm giving my age away here, how long I've been coming to tournaments here in Plattsburgh. What do you like about this? Some people criticize the fact that we have so many tournaments on Lake Champlain. In fact, I don't know if you know this or not, but the permit system that started last year here in New York, Champlain had the most tournaments. I think it was something like 72. Mm-hmm. And, of course, obviously one of these is the Bassmaster Elite Series. Yep. What do you think the tournaments bring to the table, positive or negative?
I think it's all pretty much positive. I think the ones that just they don't like it as much as they it does change the fishing a little bit, because obviously that's a lot of fish getting brought back here, but they end up finding a lot of them find their way back, because I've caught fish all the way up in Rouse's Point from here with marks on them from the tournaments and stuff, or fizz mark, like a fizz spot or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it tells me right there they do make it back and they do survive. I like it. A lot of locals don't, but I like it.
What have you learned from the Elite Series anglers over the years? You said you've been doing, around them since you were young.
Around them, a lot of just difference in like technology and different baits and fishing different stuff. Yeah. Listening to them. And then I obviously, once they leave here, a lot of them have YouTube, and then I follow Bass otherwise through obviously Bass's page there.
I'm sure you're familiar with the local bait shops and tackle shops and such.
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, what's the economic impact here when one of these tournaments comes to town?
I'd say it's really good. The amount of gas they burn from that, and then tackle-wise, we don't have a hell of a lot here, but enough that we probably do. I mean, they probably do. I guarantee you a lot of them do spend money, because a lot of them do. I've seen some go through quite the amount of tackle.
Yeah. And then there's the spectators.
Yeah, yeah. People that are come from all over. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we're here on a Friday, so, you know, the bigger crowds are ahead.
Yeah. Tomorrow and Sunday, you're going to see way bigger turnouts. A lot of people work and stuff, but it'll get definitely bigger as the week goes on.
So this device that's in front of us here, let's talk some more about that.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot of talk about this in the fishing industry. Mm-hmm. We just ran a story that actually we got from the Associated Press. Question, you know, whether this was fair and, you know, how the anglers felt about it, whether it was an unfair advantage, whether it was too easy. And I just watched Ryan cast out. He showed me where a fish was. He dropped the lure in there, first cast, 3.5-4 pound smallmouth came in. We're not going to tell the anglers about this, are we? But
no.
I'm really impressed with this because, you know, the only thing I've ever used like this is a flasher ice fishing, which mm-hmm. I've actually stuck in a canoe before. So, you know, you've got quite the device here. What's your take on all this? You obviously have one in your boat. You like using it?
I like using it. I think it's a good tool, but I will say it looks easy, but it's a lot tougher than it looks. I mean, it does not hook every fish. I've had a lot of days like what you just saw. That's like, that does not happen a hell of a lot. I mean, there's a lot of times you come out here and you'll see 30, 40, 50 smallies. They just want to chase, not eat.
Right.
They just want to chase, go back down. But yeah.
Seeing a fish is one thing, catching is
correct,
another.
Yes.
You still got to have a bait that they want to bite.
Yep, you still got to go through all that. This just narrows it down to, okay, he's right in that area. Now I got to figure out what he wants to eat. Sometimes they don't want to eat, period. Sometimes they're just dormant. And sometimes you end up doing what I've done, and you throw out a fish 1,000 times, tried everything to realize you get close enough to it, it's a drum.
Right, okay.
Done that a couple times.
Sure. What has it done for you as a fisherman? Are you using it in your tournaments? Are you allowed to use it?
They actually got rid of it this season, so it's definitely been tougher, because now you're pretty much limited to 2D lake map, which still catch fish just fine. It's just they took it away this year, but definitely last year was really fun being able to play with it all season and chase those fish that not a lot of other guys can get to. And but yeah, now without it, you're pretty much you're 2D in a lake map, and so your side scan and your down scan, which work nice, but it does suck a little bit.
Now that I've seen it, I know what it's about. You use this for ice fishing too, correct?
Correct. Yes, I do.
Talk about that a little bit, because I you know, that's something we got to talk more about, to be honest with you. You got my interest peaked on that one.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I run it on a shuttle through the winter jigging Lakers, and it is something, like, I used a flasher for a long time jigging Lakers through the ice, and it works just fine, but this is pretty nice being able to see down there and look, and oh, hey, here comes 3 or 4 trout chasing your swim bait up to the surface, right up under the ice.
Wow. Let's switch gears to this lake. What's this lake mean to this region, to you? You know, you've been out your whole life,
yep,
living around here. I went to college up here. We're in my college alma mater town. You know, I it's been great being out here on the lake with you today, because I love this lake myself. But what, you know, this is your lake. What's it mean to you?
Oh, it's special for sure. I've had a lot of great, best memories I've ever had in my life. Been out here, caught my first fish probably ever was right out of here. I fished it my whole life. It's a special lake to me. And obviously knowing it a lifetime, you get to learn all the little secret spots and stuff.
It's a big lake. And
there's spots I haven't even run yet that, it's definitely a big lake.
Great. Well, Ryan, I appreciate the time we spent together today. And you're talking with me.
Yeah, no problem.
Looking forward to maybe getting on the ice with you at some point and talking more and seeing this live scope live on Lake George.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it very much. You've been listening to the Great Northeast Podcast. For New York Outdoor News, I'm Dan Ladd.
Missed a past episode of the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast? You can find previous programs at outdoornews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platform. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover on this program, get yourself a subscription to Outdoor News. Simply call 800-535-5191 or visit us at outdoornews.com. And don't forget to join us again here in 2 weeks to talk everything out of doors. Thanks for listening to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast.